Good evening. I brought tonight the handout that Jane made last year about practice period. I want to start it tonight, and I think this is the best way to launch it because it's a very simple explanation. We do it usually about once a year, sometimes twice a year, when we take a few weeks and make our practice more of a focus in our daily life, so that we maybe choose more things to do than usual, memorize a sutra or study something, or there are a number of suggestions in here. It's called peaceful life or tranquil dwelling, of just making practice more of a focus for us. We lead such busy lives and such fast-paced lives. So practice period gives us a chance to slow down a little bit and to become more mindful of exactly how we do spend our time, what we do focus on, what our intention is, our ultimate intention, you could say. There are no requirements. In some sanghas, you have to sign a long form and, you know, promise to do this, 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 and this. We've never done that in Koban's tradition. Each one of us is so different. So it really is a very individualistic thing. Although, as we practice together, we're aware that we're all in practice period together. And so part of it can be being more aware of and involved with Sangha. That's one of the things that several people in Arcata chose to do, was to have tea with as many people one by one in the Sangha as they could, and just get to know people in a different way. Some took on a service, you know, feeding the homeless during that period. So you can see there's a huge choice that you get to choose. One suggestion is also that you meet with the teacher at least once during the practice period. We can meet, of course, during the one-day sits here. There's always Dokusan then, but you can always ring me up and make a date and either come to my house or I'll meet you in town. So that's also a possibility. Face-to-face meetings are always helpful. So let's just pass that one around. Thank you for putting that together, Jane.
To
the 8th of December, which is also a one-day sit. So that's Buddha's birthday. So we'll have a Buddha's birthday. Of course. Thank you. Tricky. Buddha's Enlightenment Day is on the 8th of December. So, are there questions about this? It's always so interesting know, there's the conventional way, and then there's Koban's way. A lot of things, and this is one of them. This is different. My friends, teacher friends, are always exhausted during practice period because it's so intense, and they do so many things and create this huge project for themselves. And it was never that way with us. I'm about to do a full moon ceremony in Arcata, and they're already emailing me about that because they've already had one the Berkeley way, which is practically an infinite number of prostrations as you go through the precepts. And they're asking me how we're going to do it. And Koban's way is so different from that also. It's also very, very simple. So here's Koban. Some words. We got to page 14 last week. So why don't we launch into it?
Students, I think I know that if we have the right attitude and good effort, then our practice extends to everything we do. Nevertheless, I still find myself feeling guilty at times when I don't sit when sitting is scheduled, because the children want to do something else, or I don't feel good. The guilt doesn't seem natural. What attitude is right not to feel this distinction between our all-pervasive practice and our sitting practice?
Guilt isn't actually what is involved here. If you are sorry to you, that is all. If a sitting opportunity comes, but you have lots of obligations which you wish to be involved with, if you do them, you have to miss the sitting. The struggle goes on always, actually. In other words, most of the day we feel sorry about missing sitting. We feel like little mice running around and around. If you don't do that, you could do the real thing that you want to do. So there is very deep suffering.
The right attitude is to develop your faith in the contents of Zazen. You cannot get out of this Zazen even if you jump on a jet plane to fly away from Zazen. Alas, in the jet plane jumped Buddha. Zazen mind is an enormously big thing. Getting up and taking care of things is in that big mind.
You cannot attach to Zazen while you are not doing it. Do you understand? It means that if you cannot do Zazen, it is all right. Don't do it. To enjoy what you are doing is the most important thing. Instead of looking at Zazen with mournful eyes while washing the diapers, you enjoy what you are doing. And when the chance comes, you sit.
Often while we are sitting, a call will come from someone asking for us to relate to them. When important things call you to this opportunity, this opportunity to sit is almost impossible to have. So you are deeply involved with others, and most of the times you don't regret not doing Zazen because you are doing something else. Zazen doesn't draw you from what you are supposed to be doing, simply. You miss the opportunity of Zazen. Actually, most people on this earth live without the opportunity to sit because there is so much emphasis on the importance of communication.
You often feel guilty when you take off from your daily activities to join sitting. You feel you are doing a personal thing, and at the same time you doubt if there is time to do it. The best way to live is to consider the people who relate with you in your day-to-day life and emphasize how they feel about your absence. Their tremendous kindness makes you able to join this sitting practice. Usually, you don't think about your situation this deeply, since you have such an urgency to discover your true nature. On that level, the people you are concerned with, the people who are concerned about you, let you go to come waste time here. And they literally say, waste time, when you come back with a shabby face.
We think we know things very well, but the things we know are still very small. What this sitting does to the whole situation is my question to myself and to you too. There are advantages and at the same time great disadvantages too, because when we are actually sitting, we cannot do other things. Actual sitting requires our entire involvement, so whatever we really like to do besides sitting cannot be done at the same time. That is a great disadvantage. We have to remember that and make this disadvantage turn to a great advantage. That is the important point.
Once is enough to sit in this life. If the sitting is a real one, many sittings are better, and whole life sitting is the best. But it is rare to have such luck.
Student, you mentioned protecting Zazen in the context of concentration because when we sit, we are not doing one thing, we are open to everything. You said when we are finished sitting, we should protect other people, protect Zazen. Is that because we are going into a situation where it's not safe?
The context in which we protect Zazen is the force of Samadhi. Samadhi is a symmetrical pattern of energy. If you are not careful enough, symmetrical energy begins to split like broken glass and you find unexpected results.
In other words, once in a while you begin to feel very well centered. Whatever you say, whatever you see is perfect. At such a time, you get so high that you begin to preach to other people. After about 5 minutes, you discover that you are at the wrong place because no one understands you. Many people begin to say that you are in a strange state. Preaching is not necessary to do at all. You become blind about others if you begin to preach to them.
Jōriki is the subject. Riki means power. Like the force of wind itself, when you grasp something, you're grasping strength, and the thing grasped, which pushes it back, balanced together. If there is not enough force, the thing will fall off. If there is too much force, it will crush the thing. That kind of balance of force in whatever you do, whatever you speak, whatever you think, all go into the situation.
So you have to be very careful about what kind of wish you send to other people. This is a kind of tantric teaching, though you don't have to name it that. Thought itself, imagination itself, is a manifestation of that force. So keep a kind spirit toward yourself and toward others, and try to balance all things as they should be. This is a necessary process in order to use that power.
If your power is scattered in five things every day, maybe someday the five things will come together 30 years from now. But it is a very big job. The wisest way is to choose one you really want to do. Consign every other thing to the background, and you will begin to observe that your doing in itself is completed, not waiting for tomorrow.
The jo in Jōriki means a stable strength. Usually it appears as a capacity for accepting other people or situation as they are, without wanting to control them. But such acceptance you finally become yourself. Jōriki is a very strange thing. Unless you sit, it never grows.
last week, I don't know if any of you saw it, but CNN showed live the Dalai Lama being received by the Congress of the United States and the President. I talked about this last week, and Hal was there. I was so impressed because he brought exactly this kind of very powerful spirit of complete acceptance of everything and everyone. It was a political event in that one by one, Congress people, Nancy Pelosi, Tom Lantos, I forget the names of all of them, but one by one, including Elie Wiesel, stood up and not only praised him for all his good work and his kindness, but spoke to the Chinese people and directly and said, this situation in Tibet needs to be taken care of, and please let this man go home and serve his people. When he had a chance to talk, he not only spoke about how pleased he was, he received the medal, which is a round golden thing, and he took it right out of the box and looked at it and showed it to everybody and then looked at it some more with a big grin. It was very charming. But he too spoke about the need of the Tibetan people for leadership and how the abuse they're being by the Chinese and how desperate the situation is in Burma. So it wasn't a la-la kind of spirituality kind of thing that was happening. It was in the rotunda in Washington, D.C. with all these people, important people, including the president, who sat right next to him, looking extremely out of his depth, at least in the beginning. He was a bit not quite all there, but as he got into it, he became more interested and more engaged, and he made a speech before the Dalai Lama did with the same kind of emphasis. And then when they left, Dalai Lama went out on George Bush's arm. Most amazing sight. But the thing I mean is that this Joe Riki subject that Coben is talking about, the balance between the grasping strength and the that pushes back, we're in this huge pushing and pulling dynamic in the world and the universe. And it comes down to everyday life. It comes down to our geopolitical situation. And there are many ways of being in it, which we've witnessed, especially these last years. And to see the Dalai Lama in the midst of that governmental situation, in his red robes and his smile, his seriousness and his infinite kindness, just for everyone and for everything. He's not even mad at the Chinese. He just wants some fairness from them. To try to balance all things as they all should be, as they want to be. It seems, for me, that it seems like that's our constant challenge. What does this situation want to be? How should this situation go? Not that I'm going to go and make it that way, but how can... what is my role? Or what is our role together in what we do, moment by moment? On the highway? In the grocery store? At work? at home. We're always trying to see and feel our way. I thought after I saw him what a hard life he leads. He just became a full professor at Emory University, I read in the paper today. So he's just trucking around the country doing all kinds of things. And it's a very difficult life in many ways. He's just putting himself out there. He's my age. He's not young anymore. Young. Thanks, Samia. Actually, he's a little bit older. It said in the paper today he's 72, so he's about probably 6 months older. But, of course, he has a whole support system that drives him around in a limousine, a bulletproof limousine. He has guards all around him, extreme anxiety about his life because there are a lot of people who would like to see him dead. He has enough support so he can do his practice every single day. He always is, it's arranged where he can stay, where he can have peace and quiet and get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do 2 or 3 hours of practice before breakfast. He gets to eat what he needs and wants to eat, and somebody is there to fix it for him. So it's in a way a very different kind of life from the one that we lead as householders, where we practice and are caretakers at the same time. And yet it's not really so different at all. And that's what Koban is pointing to. And the things we do, whatever we do, or chooses us to do it, I think is sometimes the way it works. It's a very big job. And takes a kind of equanimity and willing to accept what comes, whatever comes. Just got Donna Lynn's email about Greg up at Jikoji, who has found that he has cancer, and he wrote a kind of joyous letter of acceptance for what he's got. There is first the student's question about concentration wasn't really quite answered. Koban talked about the force of samadhi. But the next section is all about concentration. Whoever put this together didn't do a very careful job at this point. But since that was me and some others, I can't complain so much. That's the way it works. So we can do that next week, the concentration part. It's a very, very interesting distinction between Zazen itself and concentration practice. Often people think meditation and concentration are the same. Concentration is a kind of meditation, but it's not Zazen. even though our mudra is the most concentrated one of all. Very, very intense way that we hold our hands. So are there questions about this? Donna Lynn?
I have a question from last week's.
Good.
On page 13, the top of the page, he's responding to the student that says, oh, when I sit, the problems, you know, there's a lot going on. And Kogan often states, if there are no problems, people begin to sleep in Zazen. And that state is a little bit funny. Energy goes in the opposite direction. Maybe it's just my experience, but yeah, if I, you know, problems are always the Dharma gates. I always got a lot of that. But it also feels to me, though, that if there's nothing, if there is no problem, it seems almost the opposite. It's not like I go to sleep. So I think I'd rather go to sleep when there are problems. Where it's, you know, when there's nothing going on. I don't know. Do you see this as a, is this your experience, or is this, what is he?
I think what he's pointing to is the same thing that the Quakers point to, and the reason that the original Suzuki, D.T. Suzuki, didn't talk much about Zazen because he felt that Americans couldn't do it, Westerners couldn't do it, that they would space out. Because that's a very tempting thing to do. So he was certainly mistaken that we were unable to do this kind of meditation. But it is one of the dangers, so-called, that are pointed out in every practice of meditation. That if you think the whole point of meditation is to zone out and be disconnected from everything, that's not it. And I think that's what he means by sleep. Yeah. So it's to be where and who and when we actually are, which means that gravity is pulling on us, that we are this body that's, just because we're sitting this way, is feeling not completely comfortable usually, and that we are, because of who we are, filled with many challenges and problems. And sitting is not to escape any of that. It's to be it as completely and thoroughly and holy and joyfully as possible. To let it be and to accept it. Anything else? Well, it's 8 o'clock, so Dan. Yes.
Number one, I want to confirm Saturday is a full day sit.
Yes. And it's also ending with the Daisei Gakki ceremony. So please come and bring food that you can feed to the hungry ghosts and then eat afterwards. What we do is fill the table with good things to eat in the back room. And this is an old Buddhist tradition of feeding the many hungry beings. So we bring food and we do a ceremony and open the gates It's like Halloween, where you open the gates to the other world and invite everyone in to feast. And then when the feasting is done, close the gates and sit down and enjoy whatever we've brought. So it's our version of Halloween. It's also a chance to honor the people who passed away during this last year. And so if you bring the names, they'll be read in the middle of the ceremony as a way of honoring and recognizing.